RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Get an RV policy quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV. And by Good Sam Auto and RV Club. For a special membership offer, visit goodsam.com/RV Family Travel Atlas.
And by Cabela's, the world's foremost outfitter. Let Camp Cabela's help get you ready for your next great camping adventure at cabelas.com. And by Campers Inn. To find your family's next RV, visit campersinn.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are tipping our hats to a pretty amazing accomplishment, the 100-year anniversary of the National Park Service. We've been hanging out in some pretty sweet national parks ourselves, and now it's time to share our top tips for making the most out of your own NPS visit.
Plus, we have a great interview with Ranger Donna Lee Watson, who guided us to the best bike rides and hikes on the Scudic Peninsula in Acadia National Park. And we're bringing you the first RV FTA product reviews from Cabela's, sharing our top his and her picks for hiking gear after our recent time on the trails.
You might think that you can just show up at a national park and find the best drives, vistas, and hikes in a snap. But we know that finding the real gems of our nation's treasured lands demands a bit of effort. You are listening to episode number 97, Find Your Park, #NPS100.
Before we head into this week's featured topic, Find Your Park, #NPS100, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Progressive Insurance.
For many of us, our weekends are spent on the open road. Feel confident knowing that with Progressive's 24/7 roadside assistance, you will never be stranded. In fact, Progressive will tow your RV and your vehicle, even if your vehicle isn't insured with them. Travel without worry. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com/RV today.
No one wants to be stranded.
No, and anybody who's had a mishap on the side of the road knows how important roadside assistance is. So if you haven't looked into your own, now's the time to do it.
It's a great Van Morrison song, Stranded. It is.
I don't know if I know that one.
Come on. You're
around your Van Morrison.
It's one of his more recent songs.
All right. We'll take care of that
later. All right.
Later.
So listen, for our RVFTA news roundup, we wanted to remind all of you people, we have another podcast. We have two other podcasts in our network. And on Campground of the Week, we have been reviewing some great campgrounds from our own summer adventures. Right, Stephanie?
Yeah. So we have been on many legs of our first big summer road trip already. And what we've been doing is actually reviewing each of the campgrounds on Campground of the Week, not on this podcast. And we don't plan on doing it on this podcast.
Well, our correspondents are taking their paid leave for the summer. You know, they're cashing in those days because if they don't use them, they'll lose them.
Yeah, paid in air quotes.
So you and I have taken over Campground of the Week. And I have to say, I was just thinking about this today. We have visited amazing campground after amazing campground. This was a well-planned trip.
It's been going well so far. Hashtag knock on wood. Okay, so but what we have over there on Campground of the Week are three different campground reviews for places that we've already stayed at this summer. The first one, episode number 34, was Atlantic Oaks in Cape Cod, which is a phenomenal place. So go over and listen to that. The second was Normandy Farms in Foxborough, Massachusetts.
And then for episode 36, we did the Scudic Woods Campground in Acadia National Park. And so that's sort of a sister episode to this very episode. We're looking at them as being linked. So you want to listen to both. So on Campground of the Week, we gave the full campground review and also things to do in the area around the campground and on the Scudic Pacific Peninsula. And then on this episode of RVFTA, we sort of have an interview that accompanies that episode, the interview with Ranger Donnelly Watson, and our tips for enjoying national parks. So if you haven't subscribed to Campground of the Week, like, what's your problem?
No, we know we have a lot of listeners who really do love our travel segments, and we just don't want them to think that we're not doing it. If you're not listening to Campground of the Week, we are doing just our in-depth travel segments, but we're doing it over on that podcast instead.
Yeah. Now, Girl Camper has also been up to trouble once again. On episode 40, she gave us some tips for cooking the perfect steak. And after I listened to that segment, I was so hungry for a steak.
But were you planning on cooking one?
Well, after listening to her tips, I might be able to.
All right, let's go. I want to see that. Okay, so that was a really good segment. We always love to share it when Girl Camper is sharing things that we think are good for our whole audience. We always make sure to mention them over on this podcast. So then also her featured topic this week was reducing the chances of trailer theft. And this is a really big concern for a lot of people. And, you know, Janine really went through really low tech all the way up to high tech things that you could do to reduce your chance of trailer theft. So it's a good segment. You should listen.
And I think if you're cooking delicious steaks at your trailer night after night after night, you might increase the chances of trailer theft.
You're attracting undue attention.
Yeah, it was a great segment, though. Both segments on Girl Camper, really well-researched segment on reducing the chances of trailer theft. And she had some great ideas and also researched some great ideas that were fairly simple and straightforward for eliminating the chance of having your trailer stolen, which that would be a downer.
All we ever want people, you know, when they're listening to our show, we want people to walk away with a couple of aha moments, you know, usually not from us, from our guests, you know, like, oh, yeah, I never thought of that. And I really felt like she had those aha moments in this episode, like simple tips. And I know a few of them I thought, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Why don't we do that?
Janine's a walking epiphany, for goodness sake. Every 10 seconds, there's an epiphany.
All right. Well,
there's a sudden realization of truth. That's just, she speaks in parables.
Yeah. Well, if you are having an epiphany that you need to go to a balloon festival, we have one for you, right?
The New Jersey Balloon Festival. It's July 29th to 31st. We are going to be there hanging with our friends at Progressive Insurance at the Progressive RV, hanging on Flo's road trip. We'll be meeting and greeting our podcast listeners and friends. We'll give you more specific times if you're following us on social media in terms of the exact hours we'll be there. Mm-hmm. But please plan on coming to the Balloon Festival, stopping by, hanging out with us. We'll take some pictures of the balloons. We'll do some selfies.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go see Third Eye Blind together with you.
Of course we're going to go see Third Eye Blind. That's like a blast from the past. Who doesn't want to see
that? How's it
going to
be?
No. Stop singing. I think we got bad emails
when
last time.
You don't know me.
No, seriously. I think we got bad mail.
that first Third Eye Blind album was like a classic.
Yeah, okay.
It went downhill after that.
So then people can listen to it there, not here, okay? So anyway, we will be jamming to some Third Eye Blind, and you can jam along with us at the New Jersey Balloon Festival from July 29th through 31st. All right. Now, lastly, we want to remind everyone that we are sort of blogging our trip in a different way this summer. We're doing it over on Instagram.
Yeah, and I think it's been a good decision for us. I mean, we're doing two podcasts a week of our own. Stephanie's producing Girl Camper, and we're blogging for a lot of other people. We're blogging for Progressive and Go RVing and Cabela's, et cetera, et cetera. So we just wanted to lift the pressure of blogging on our own site and really, instead of just putting up pictures on social media, sort of actually putting up posts with a bit more travel information and travel intel, a little bit more meatier posts, as it were.
Yeah, just
and
I think sort it's been of thoughts going, that yeah. we have as we're going through, and we're trying to take notes, you know, about those thoughts and kind of put them out there in bite-sized form on Instagram. And we're having a good time doing it that way. It's been working quite well so far. So if you aren't, you know, if you're looking at our blog and going, where are all their blogs from their travels? Well, they're over on Instagram at RV Family Travel
Atlas. And our blog posts are over at Go RVing Scenic Route, and we're going to have pieces up on Cabela's and over at lifelanes.progressive.com. Yeah. So check out all of our great writing over there, too.
All right. So
we'll be back in a second with our featured topic, which is Find Your Park, hashtag NPS 100.
And we're going to have some great tips to help you find your park and enjoy it a little bit more than you might if you just show up without these tips. All right, stay tuned.
Before we head into our first topic, our tips for visiting national parks, we need to thank our friends over at Good Sam. And boy, let me tell you, there are lots of great Good Sam campgrounds near our national parks.
And we've stayed at a few of them on this trip already. We stayed at a Good Sam park outside of the Cape Cod National Seashore.
Right. Atlantic Oaks is literally right outside of the National Seashore. It's really our top pick for a private campground on Cape Cod. And it was a Good Sam, and we did get our discount.
Yes, we did. So Good Sam saves you money. Okay. How does it do that? You get 10% off the nightly rate at over 2,100 Good Sam RV parks and campgrounds around the country. You also save money on fuel at Pilot Flying J. You save money at Camping World. You can get up to 30% off of parts and accessories.
And we were just at Camping World today saving money, weren't we?
Yes, we did. Whipped out that Good Sam membership to get your percentage off.
You don't even have to take out the membership. You just give them your name and address.
Oh, you give them your name. Okay, you always take care of the checkout process.
Because I don't want you to see what I'm buying.
Exactly. You keep it hush hush. Okay. So for our listeners, you can get a special deal on your membership. Go to goodsam.com/RV Family Travel Atlas. If you sign up for a Good Sam membership there, you also get the additional benefit of a voucher that you're going to be able to cash in on your first night when you camp at a Good Sam park.
Yeah, it's really a great value. And we have renewed our Good Sam membership every single year that we've been RVing. And we will always be Good Sam members. In fact, I've considered the old lifetime membership. I think I'm going to get that at some point.
Oh, okay, we'll have to talk about that off air. I don't know how much that costs.
I don't remember either. But we've renewed our Good Sam every single year. And you also get some free issues of either Trailer Life or Motorhome. It's a steal.
Yeah. All right. So go and do that now. GoodSam.com/RV Family Travel Atlas. And then after you do that, you can start researching your next trip to a national park, because we're going to give you tips to do that right now. In fact, we have 6 tips. And these tips we really came up with as we've been visiting some NPS sites already this summer, because we've done tons of national park, you know, vacations over the years. But, you know, this year when we're visiting, we're really looking at it through podcasters' eyes, right? Not just travelers' eyes. And we're going, like, we've got some tips that maybe some people that were standing in this visitor center could use.
I think that, you know, we started thinking about this at Acadia National Park, and we knew that the visitor center was going to be packed and crazy during the day. But yet the boys had to go to the bathroom as we were passing it one day. So we pulled into the visitor center, which we had literally been avoiding because of how nuts it gets there. And the boys had to go potty. I took them in, and there was a line out the door for the bathroom. And there was a line 60 people deep to talk to park rangers.
Wow.
And I kept thinking, and I'm not trying to be condescending, but I kept thinking, there are hundreds of people in this visitor center who have no idea where they are, where they're going, or what they're going to do today. And I just thought, that's not how we travel.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how a lot of our podcast listeners travel. That's not how we want them to travel.
Yeah.
So we started to think about, like, what are the best ways to approach a big national park? It's not like going to some small little theme park where you just walk in and you walk around and you go on the rides.
Or even a big theme park. I think that we become so used, especially, think about not just theme parks. Let's talk about the other kinds of places where people go and pay like an entrance fee. Like an aquarium, right? Or a children's museum. These places that are, you know, top picks when people are traveling, and you show up and you pay your admission, you get a detailed maybe map, right? With all the areas highlighted. The whole thing is right there for you. This is this room and this is that room, and you can go see this or you can go on this ride. Then the bathrooms are marked. And then also if there's a schedule of performances that day, they'll be highlighted which ones you need to pay for or whatever. Like, it's all very laid out for you. And I think a lot of people are going and showing up at national parks with sort of the same sort of preparation that you might do to visit the, say, Georgia Aquarium.
Meaning none.
Well, just that you've looked at reviews online. And people have said it's a great spot. You've seen the price. You've seen the maybe operating hours. And you think you're going to go and you're going to pay your entrance fee and you're going to get your information packet and get going on the park. And we really had an epiphany this year after hearing so many people say, oh, it's going to be so crowded. Oh, it's going to be so crowded. And then also witnessing people kind of navigate through this national park. We were like, well, this is something we want to talk
about.
We
even have some friends who like trash talked Acadia a little bit as being too crowded. Now, this was like our fifth trip to Acadia. What they mean by that, mistakenly, and I think I said this on another podcast, is the Park Loop Road is crowded. Mm-hmm. That is just a fraction of the park.
Can I say something? The Park Loop Road is crowded between the hours of 10 and 4.
Right. It's not crowded.
Because we were on the Park Loop earlier than that when we hiked Gorham Mountain together. And there was one other car in the Gorham Mountain trailhead parking lot, which is small and one of the most popular
hikes.
You're
diving into one of our tips. So let's just give that tip as our first tip, is you want to head to the most popular places early, like let's say before 9 o'clock. And we went, like Stephanie said, we went to do a hike on Gorham Mountain. We traded date hikes with another couple that we were camping with. And they did a hike one day and we watched their kids. And then we swapped. 8 o'clock in the morning, Stephanie and I, we were gunning it to Gorham Mountain. I have to say, I was really rushing to get there. I wasn't speeding, but I was certainly driving the speed limit trying to get there. I was all stressed out.
I was like, we need to settle down.
Because Gorham Mountain is one of the most popular hikes in the park. Like, we're not going to get parking. We pull in at 8:30, and there was one other car in the parking lot.
Yeah.
There was 20 open spaces.
So here's the thing. When we say you have to get there early, the bottom line is you don't even have to get there that early. We're not saying get there like at the crack of dawn. It's just you have to get there before people have left their hotel rooms, gone to have breakfast.
Yeah, a lot of people wake up at 8, go have breakfast, they read the newspaper, they leave the hotel at 10, mm-hmm. or the bed and breakfast at 10. Now, when we came down from Gorham Mountain, was about an hour and a half,
full.
2 hours later. Parking lot was full. People were stalking each other for spots.
Yep. This happened on every single morning we went into the park. We made it a point to get there before 9 when we went to the Bubble Rock hike with the boys the first morning. We had our pick of parking spots when we got there. We came down and people were getting like chased out of the parking lot by rangers because they were sitting there in illegal parking. It was a total it was like mayhem. The same thing when we did the Carriage Road bike ride. We had our pick of spots in the Jordan Pond parking lot at 9 o'clock in the morning, and that is the most popular spot in like the whole park, I think.
And of course, some of you might be saying, well, not every national park is Acadia, but I would venture to say that most of the parks work this way.
Any park that we've ever visited, like Great Smokies, it was the same way. Great Smokies is the most visited national park in our entire country, and we did the same thing when we got to a ranger station early in the morning. We walked in, we had personal conversations with rangers. Sometimes we would pass through those same places later on in the day because we were going like out from somewhere, jam-packed, people can't find parking spots. I really think that if you hit that pre-9 o'clock in the morning hour, you're good.
Good. All right, so our next tip is a tip that we always give. Do your research, consult local experts. Okay, go beyond TripAdvisor. All right, now you came up with a great tip, and I love that you came up with this because I was actually doing it without really being cognizant of it. Don't just get the guidebook to Acadia National Park or the guidebook to Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Those are fine. Those are good, whatever brand you pick. Pick a guidebook that's very specific to what you want to do. If you are really focused on hiking in the Great Smoky Mountains, get a hiking book for the Great Smoky Mountains. For Acadia this time, I bought 2 photography books about photographing Acadia. They helped me immensely, and in a sense, they became my personalized guidebook. They were more useful to me than just having a moon guide or a Frommer's or whatever it is. So if you're interested in birding, photography,
birding, right.
hiking, get a book about, you know, birding in Acadia National Park, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I think it's really important to say that, you know, you really try to find the internet. Everybody thinks that, you know, we all can be experts on anything. You know, respect that local expert on an area and really seek out, like, who is it? Like, there's the guy, we always used his book. There's the guy who does all the hikes in Acadia. You know, he's like done, like, he hikes like 365 days a
that
year in Acadia.
That long, skinny book I have that fits in your pocket,
yeah,
like Tom St. Germain,
I think.
Yes,
that's it. Yeah, I mean, this guy knows Acadia hiking, and he's helped us find so many wonderful family hikes that people people would never discover.
The book literally has every hike in Acadia, and it tells you if it's appropriate for kids or if it's strenuous. If you're just working out of a Moon or a Frommer's or whatever it is, yeah, it's going to mention a couple popular hikes, but it's not going to give you something that's comprehensive that can really take you to those off-the-beaten-track gems.
Okay, so we're saying please do your research, really dive into the park and those local experts before you go there. Now, my next tip is that you're going to develop that plan ahead of time, but then you're going to consult the rangers on that plan.
For example, when we showed up at Skudik Woods, okay, we knew we wanted to go on a bike ride with the boys. That was sort of one of the first things we wanted to do. We had been reading about the bike trails on the Skudik Peninsula that leave directly from the campground. Now, we looked at a trail map. We had read up on it. But you can't really tell how hard a bike path is going to be for kids unless you talk to somebody who's been on that bike path. So we went to the ranger. We hooked up with Ranger Donnelly Watson there. We told her how old the kids were. We had a 10-minute conversation with her, and she came up with the absolute perfect bike ride for our family.
Yeah, there was a lot of different options. And when I was looking at the map, I had actually picked out a different option. And the first thing she said is, that can make me cry, and I like a tough buck bike ride. And I said, okay, look, we were just on the carriage roads of Acadia yesterday. I can't take them on anything too hard. They'll never bike again. Like, I love that I got that tip from her, because I didn't just say, oh, I know what I'm doing.
I'm just thinking right now, oh, after, you know, 6 years of RV travel, 7 years of RV travel, and all the national parks we've done, we have never had a bad recommendation from an NPS ranger. Never. They always hit the mark exactly for our family.
Yeah. And I was thinking, like, when we were in the Smokies, we went into the one visitor center and we had an idea, and I can't even remember what it was. You had an idea for a hike that we had wanted to do.
Akonolufti Visitor Center.
But you had a hike.
Oh, in my hiking books, I had maybe two hikes. And I went up to the ranger and I said, look, I have twin six-year-olds and a two-year-old and a backpack. And I was thinking about this hike or this hike. He was like, no.
How about this one?
You want to do the Kephart Prong Trail. That is going to be a huge adventure for your kids, but yet it's not really dangerous, but they're going to feel like they're on a big adventurous hike.
And that's one of our favorite family hikes ever, and one of our boys' favorite hikes
Better than anything the guidebooks had recommended for a family hike.
Yeah, but us having done our research, the point is, if you just went in and you said to a ranger, hey, recommend a hike for me, you know, it's hard for them to know exactly what you're looking for. But what happens is, as soon as you present your ideas to the ranger, all of a sudden they get a feel for like what you're looking for.
And who's in your group?
Yeah.
We got Granny with us. She's 85. She's tough as nails.
Spitfire,
but she only likes to do five miles.
She has her limit.
And there are people who have that granny who will do that 5 mile hike. And the ranger will be like, well, I know exactly the hike for your grandmother. You know, they're that good.
Right. You know? Okay. So we want everybody to go to the popular site early. We want you to do your research and get really specific with local experts before you go. We want you to develop a plan, but then run that plan past a ranger. Number four, we want you to look at a program schedule in advance of arrival, or at least when you first arrive.
Now, we usually do it when we first arrive. And I wish that we had looked at the program for Acadia National Park even before arriving, because the schedules of programs by the rangers are usually jam-packed at our great national parks. And it takes a little advanced planning to work them in and to get to them. So you don't want to just wake up one morning and go, oh, let's do a ranger program. You want to look at that either before you leave or when you first arrive at the park and say, okay, on Thursday, we are going to go do star watching.
Yeah, the reason why I say or when you first arrive is because I'm going to be honest, some of the national parks are not fantastic about keeping an updated schedule online. So sometimes it can be tricky to get that. And then also sometimes they release them week by week, and like your travel might cross over into the next week.
Now that you say that, I feel like I shouldn't have been so high and mighty about that a second ago, because if you went onto Acadia National Park's website, I don't know that you'd find that ranger program for the whole week. I mean, maybe you'd have to dig.
It can be tricky, because I've done it looking for it before, and it'll say, you know, get it at your ranger station or whatever. So I think that varies from park to park. But the thing is that at least when you first arrive, because what happens is if you wait a day or two, or you think, I'm going to do a ranger program on Thursday, so I'm going to look at the schedule on Thursday, what happens is you look at it and you go, oh, I missed that on Tuesday, or that was yesterday, or you had to sign up for this in advance. There's a lot of like these tricky little things with national park programs, like, you know, about registering advance or where it is in the park. You have to think through them. They're worth it, but you really do have to think through it.
On the flip side, at least in our experience, they're not overcrowded. And maybe it's for that reason. You know, you show up to this amazing program and there's six other people there.
Yeah. So let me, for an example from our trip, when we looked at the Ranger program on the first day that we were there, I'm looking through it. And all of a sudden I saw an open fire tower, and we had already done a hike that morning, but the Ranger was going to be at the top of Beach Mountain. And the fire tower up there, which is normally locked to the public, was going to be open between 1 and 3 in the afternoon.
Huge score for our family.
I was like, fire tower.
Now, did we have to lie to our children and tell them, no, this isn't another hike?
We're we didn't even mention the word hike.
We're going to a fire tower. It's not a hike. It may be a mile up and a mile back, up a mountain, but it's not a hike.
No, it's a fire tower.
We're going to a fire tower, boys. And they bought that for about the first half mile.
Yeah, they were like,
but
this
then
is a
hike. They got into the hike.
Yeah.
And they really did enjoy climbing on top of the fire tower for those 360-degree views of Acadia National Park.
It was an amazing hike. And honestly, we've been there many times. This is the first time that we did this hike. And we would not have gone and done it if we hadn't seen it in the Ranger program. So that's just an example of how that can really guide you to explore different parts of the park.
And a shout out to Philip and Leslie, podcast listeners and friends, who did that hike a couple days after we did, because they saw our photos from doing it.
I think that's why they did it. Yeah, and I think that they really enjoyed it too. It's a phenomenal hike.
They said they were pinching themselves because Acadia is so beautiful, and that's what it does. You get up there and it's amazing. And so many of our national parks, it's almost hard to believe how magnificent they are.
Okay, so that is number 5, okay? So make sure, I'm sorry, my number 4, make sure that you look at a program schedule in advance of arrival or when you first arrive. Okay, number 5, spend the afternoon in off the beaten track areas. This goes hand in hand with going to the popular sites in the morning, okay? So do those really heavily visited sites in the morning, and then in the afternoon, go off to the beaten track areas. In that period of time between 11 and 3, when the park is, those park loop roads, those highly visited areas.
You don't want to go off to the beaten track areas. You want to go to the off the beaten track areas. If you go off to the beaten track areas, you're in the most crowded places, dear.
Yeah, no, you want to go to the off the beaten track area.
I'm going to get slugged for this later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Okay.
I think this is the most important tip here. If you went to a big national park and every single day you tried to tackle the most popular parts of the park at the busiest times, I could see a week full of frustration that could turn you off to visiting our national parks.
Burnout. You get burnout.
I mean, we descended into the Jordan Pond area in the middle of the day. We took a chance. We wanted popovers. We wanted to go for a bike ride. And we went during a busy time, and we navigated it. You kicked butt, got a great parking spot.
I was not happy we were doing it. It
was borderline a mistake. Well, it was the one day we didn't follow our own advice.
Well, we actually did follow our advice. We were there early because we did the carriage road bike ride very early, and we were fine. But then what happened was there was this whole snafu about putting the bikes on the tram. It's
the
a long
Island
story.
LL Bean Island Explorer, just so you know, if you're in Acadia, kids' bikes do not fit on there.
That's crazy.
So Stephanie had to take one bus with the boys, and I got left behind with their bikes, and she had to drive all the way back to get me.
Right. So then I had to leave my parking spot at the Jordan Pond parking lot. We had gotten there early.
Primo parking spot. Good point.
I had to leave that to come get you at the parking lot. And then
we had to go back and get parking.
You were like, let's still try to have
popovers. I wanted popovers.
And I was like, really? I just left my parking spot. You should see people. They're like, it's Crazyville over there. And you're
let's try.
So if our plans had worked out the way that they were supposed to, we would have been fine. But we had the snafu. Now, we thought, oh, this is great. We'll bike from this place to this place, and then we'll take the Island Explorer back. never thinking that
never would
kids
have thought
bikes
that the kids'
don't
bikes
fit.
Don't lock into place in their bike carriers. And they, you know, they have a rule, you can't bring bikes on the bus.
That was very
even though there was like three other people on the bus, they could have broken the rule for us, but they didn't.
No, they didn't break any rules.
So listen,
for us.
Things don't always go according to plan. I mean, you can try and have like be the master of your planning. And you're going to have those mess ups.
But I still, like, I kind of pride myself on being a little smarter than, like, the average visitor because you were like, no, we're doing this. It's a 20-minute wait for popovers. Go find a parking
they
spot.
They told me a 15-minute wait for outdoor seating at Jordan Pundas for popovers. Game on, honey. You can park on the lawn.
So you said, go find a spot.
I'll go
back into the lot. The lot's like just Cuckooville, and I drive right up to the path that's coming off of the major like thoroughfare, and I drive right up to the path and I sat there. The first family that walked out, I go, are you leaving? Where are you parked? And they pointed over their car. I go, I'm gonna follow
stalker
you
style.
I did. I said, I'm gonna stalk you.
That's
over
what my
park.
Mother does at Christmas. My mother literally tells me at Christmas, she goes to the mall, she goes right up to the front of the row and just waits for some unsuspecting family to come along.
I had a parking spot in 5 minutes.
You did a great job. And we had popovers. We had a delicious lunch at Jordan Pondhouse. Don't talk trash on Jordan Pondhouse people out there because it's too popular. Don't be too cool for school on this one. The popovers are great. The food was great. The view was beautiful.
All right. So our last tip for enjoying national parks is to take safety issues seriously. Okay. The recommendations that people make, that rangers make, that experts make in terms of trail difficulty, wildlife, these are serious recommendations. Our national parks are wild spaces. They are not amusement parks.
I'm going to be blunt. You can die in our national parks.
People do.
And people do every summer. And there are parts of all of our national parks, or at least most of them, that are very dangerous. They're usually going to be marked. There's usually going to be indications that they are dangerous. If you do your reading and research, you will quickly find out what those places are. Take those things seriously. Now, in our trip to Acadia, for instance, Scudic Point is known to be dangerous. Waves can come up and crash and surprise people who have walked to the edge of the rock and they get swept into the water. So we went with extreme caution. You know, we brought the boys out there. It was a calm day water-wise, ocean-wise, but we were keeping our eyes on them like hawks, and we were defining boundaries for where they could go. At one point, we did walk up to this big crevice and let them look over, but it was with caution.
Yeah, and I had already determined that it was a safe thing for us to do, like depending on their behavior at the time and everything. But, you know, like these stories that you hear in the news of people approaching wildlife too closely and everything, you know, these really happen. And it's just people who are kind of acting like they're in a zoo or in a, you know, in a space that's sort of, you know, set up or maintained in a structured format or habitat.
It's not
and
a theme park.
Not a
it's
theme
the
park.
Wild. And
right.
I want to add, too, we have read many times that sometimes the people that die are not even novices. They are actually people that have been in the parks many times, but they make a mistake they shouldn't make.
Right.
So be careful. Be safe when you're visiting our national parks.
Yeah, absolutely. That's our last tip that we're going to leave you with. Now, to talk more about our national parks, we brought on the aforementioned Donna Lee Watson, who is a ranger at Scudic Woods Campground. And she was so helpful. She recommended the bike ride. She recommended a hike for us the next morning. She was just your great ranger, like just an example of the perfect park ranger.
Energy, enthusiasm, charisma, just loved
knowledge.
The Scudic Peninsula, so knowledgeable, answered every question for us. And I just said, I want to interview you. I want to talk to you a little bit more, get some more recommendations from you for the Scudic Peninsula. So we'll be back in a second with Donna Lee Watson.
Choosing the right RV dealership is as important as choosing the right RV.
Campers Inn has thousands of RVs to choose from and has been the RVer's trusted resource for 50 years.
In 1966, Art and Fran Hirsch, along with their sons Bob, David, and Jeff, invested their family's life savings to buy 4 folding tent trailers, selling them out of their front yard in Acton, Massachusetts.
Their dream was to build a hometown dealership where every customer feels like family and becomes a customer for life.
50 years and three generations later, Campers and RV is the nation's largest family-operated dealership with 15 locations on the East Coast.
Their professional staff and certified trained service personnel are driven by the commitment to treat each customer fairly and with respect.
Find your family's next RV at campersin.com.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here with Ranger Donnelly Watson at the Schoodick Woods Campground at the Schoodick Ranger Station. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate
it.
And you've given our family great recommendations already.
Yay.
So as soon as you gave us a few great recommendations, I said, I want to chat with you. Because you just nailed the bike ride, the hike, all of those things. So let's start by telling our audience a little bit about yourself. How did you get into this whole ranger gig?
Well, I got into this whole ranger gig because I've always loved the outdoors as well as people. And so I've been a ranger at Acadia exclusively for 13 years.
Excellent. So you were on MDI first and then came here.
This is my first year actually working at Schoodick because of the campground.
Because of the campground. So let's talk about the campground because you're the star of the show, but so is this campground.
Absolutely.
So this is the newest campground in the National Park Service system, and it has sort of an interesting story. So how did this campground come into existence? What gave birth to this?
Well, what gave birth to it, there was the end of the point, the peninsula, of course, has been the park for a while after belonging to the Navy and the Park Service, and so it was sort of a highly sought-after area, and it turns out that it was about to become condos and golf courses.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And it's one time, as our superintendent at the time said, that we were a little happy to see the economy fail or falter a bit because it bought some time for the Park Service as well as a couple other organizations to step in and have a chat, so to speak. And it ended up that the land was donated, and then a private donor put up lots of money to put up these exquisite facilities in here.
So the private donor basically paid for the campground, this ranger station.
Exactly.
The bike paths.
All the bike paths, all the construction, and they were wonderful in hiring. This is all local. For the most part, all local labor and even materials in this campground.
Seems like there's an effort in a lot of ways to be connected to the community and be supportive of the community around here as opposed to being separate.
Absolutely. And everything from the original architects and designers right down to the guys who swung the hammers and put this place together are pretty much local. And the community has been incredibly receptive to this whole thing.
Excellent. Now, when I first came here, I thought, well, why don't they sell firewood right here at the ranger station? And after being here for a few days, I sort of tapped into that philosophy a little bit. You guys don't want to sell firewood here. You don't want to sell milk here.
No, we don't. We want to stay a campground, and we want to give the opportunity to the community as well to do things like put firewood out. And I think the big thing about showers in this campground, too, is that we are really hoping that somebody will take that on as an enterprise here.
Right. So there are no showers here at the campground
That's
correct. And so you're hoping that a private concession would come in and build something and run it.
Yep, somebody on the outside, on the outskirts of the park in the community, as has been done at the other two campgrounds.
Excellent. Now, there's a lovely sign, a plaque on the wall over here as I walked into the ranger station, which I just read right before the interview. And it said, this spectacular gift, right, from this private benefactor is sort of in the whole tradition of how Acadia was built. Could you comment on that at all, how so much of the park we do owe to private benefactors?
Absolutely. Between people donating the land and passing land onto the park to donating the monies, including the fees, to get into the park, which also help.
Excellent. Let's talk a little bit more specifically about the campground. So what would our listeners find if they came here in their RVs or if they came here to pitch a tent? What is the campground like?
This campground is amazingly beautiful aesthetically. It's set up beautifully for RVs, for privacy. We have tent-only sites. We have sites for walk-in, hike-in, actually, campers, so that they can be private and walk anywhere from an eighth to a half a mile to have a a beautiful private campsite.
Great. And when you say the sites are private for an RV, particularly for someone, we camp a lot of private campgrounds. Our site feels like it's like our own little world, our own little private world.
Yeah. They were beautifully designed to have trees between each of the driveway areas and be set up really
now. What the amphitheater has become a hit for our kids who have done four programs at the amphitheater.
Nice.
So what kind of programs might you find here on a summer night if you were camping here?
We have everything from summer night stargazing to evening geology, ecology, bird programs, early morning bird programs, children's story hours. There's actually a scavenger hunt, which is actually done by the CERC, down by the CERC building, the Education and Research Center.
Right. So lots of programs in the amphitheater here.
Programs.
And those, there's none Sunday and Monday, but then 5 nights a week after that.
Yes, pretty much 5 nights a week, or at least things in the afternoons.
Right, and the amphitheater is beautiful.
Oh, it's amazing how beautiful that is.
Yeah, everything here is beautiful. It feels like a little slice of heaven to me.
Yes, it is.
So tell us about the peninsula itself. What are some of the highlights, if someone came here on a family vacation, what are some of the highlights of the Scudic Peninsula, of this section of the park?
Yes, this section of the park. It's really aesthetically beautiful. It's about the coastline. It's about the surf. It is now about some hiking trails that there are existing hiking trails, and there are new hiking trails which really cater to anybody. We have some very easy trails, and they're wooded, beautiful trails, and the bike paths are really amazing.
Yeah, I find that there's a lot of really good family-friendly stuff here.
Yes.
We have little kids, as our listeners know, and there's a lot of mellow hikes and mellower bike rides, maybe a little bit more so than MDI. Of course, you have your dangerous spots here, too.
Absolutely. Some of the bike roads have some pretty steep, curvy grades, and we are exceptionally good, I think, at making sure people know where they are and what they are.
You advised us perfectly. I told you how old the kids were, and you said, you want to take this path. Was it Wansqueak?
Yes.
Down to the harbor, which is it was a challenge for our kids, but doable.
Right.
So what are some other of the major highlights, things you'd want to hit when you were camping here for a week?
Oh, you definitely want to go around the loop and do the point itself. Scudic Point itself is all about the surf. You get a view all around out to the lighthouses. There's beautiful walks on the beach down there for everybody. And really the CERC, the Scudic Education and Research Center, is a great place to visit.
Right. Now, what is the relationship between that institute and the NPS? How does that work?
Well, we have rangers that actually work out of the research center. And they also have the scientists there that do lecture series and research and really intertwines really good with the Park Service programs.
Yes, and there's a beautiful hike down there.
Yes.
That you or one of the other rangers recommended.
Sundew Trail.
The Sundew Trail was
very
lovely.
Very easy, as in handicapped accessible easy.
Right, and then it leads down to some great water views.
Absolutely.
What are some of your personal favorite things to do? If you had just a day off and you were going to go for a hike or a bike ride, what would you do?
Absolutely, I would hike and bike. I would hike. The entire trail system is only 6 miles. You can actually hike right out of the campground, go right down to Blueberry Hill and the point, and turn around and come back and have a 6 mile, pretty moderate hike.
And that's a key point about this campground, is that you can walk out of the door of your RV and be on the hiking trails.
Absolutely. And if you want to go one way, we have a shuttle bus that comes by. It's all part of the deal every half hour.
The Island Explorer, right? So same as over on MDI.
Yep.
So why should someone who's visiting Acadia National Park make sure they get over here? I mean, we went to MDI 3 times or 4 times before we made it here. So what would you say to encourage people to come on over to this side of the park?
Well, it's a whole different invitation to come over here. It's just a quiet, easy, beautiful place to be, kind of get away from perhaps the tourist things that are going on in Bar Harbor, which are wonderful, by the way.
Right.
And the mountains over there are wonderful, and it's just a lot of fun, but it's a nice little different break.
Absolutely. Well, Ranger Donnelly Watson, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, we have loved it here, and it's just been a highlight of our summer trip, and we really hope to see you guys again next summer.
Oh, and we love your enthusiasm. It's great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Now it's time for our segment on his and her picks for hiking gear that we used in Acadia National Park. And this segment is sponsored by our friends at Cabela's.
And Cabela's is passionate about supporting families in their outdoor adventures. They have everything you need to camp and start making memories that will be treasured for generations. You can check out Camp Cabela's website for fun articles and tips and tricks for getting your families into the great outdoors. Camp Cabela's, it's in your nature.
Hashtag it's in your nature.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, you hashtag that away. All right. So what we did was we used some of our new products that Cabela's had sent us. And what Cabela's did was send us products that we were looking to incorporate into our lifestyle. So we spent some time like talking with them about, you know, what we do as a family and sort of almost like what we were lacking, you know, like what we felt like, what things we were using were not really up to snuff or what things we were looking to expand on. And they gave us some stuff to try out. And, you know, rain gear has always been really important to our family.
Incredibly important. We've been saying for years on this podcast that rainy day is like, don't stop us. You know, as long as it's not pouring, driving rain, if it's misting or light rain, we will go hiking. We will go kayaking. We love to get outside in the rain and not let us stop us from having fun. So we've always had raincoats as a family, and we've always had decent raincoats as a family. However, I have never stepped up into a Gore-Tex raincoat, and I did not know what I was missing. All right, so I have been sampling the men's rainy day river parka with Gore-Tex, and it's $129.99. So that's about maybe $50 more than I had spent on my other decent raincoat. But I was blown away by this raincoat for a few reasons. The Gore-Tex material is awesome. It breathes. It dries quickly. It doesn't, like on a rainy day where you're hiking and sweating and it's moist out, you don't get soggy.
Well, it was so funny when you said that one day when we were hiking in them, because we actually did have a spate of bad weather in the Scudic Peninsula, and we didn't let it keep us down. It was rainy, and we still did hiking.
We hiked every day in the mist. It was like a misty rain.
So there was one day when we went on this hike, and we all had our raincoats on, and you, of course, had your fancy new Gore-Tex.
I had my fancy Gore-Tex, and you can get it in black, red, blue, and green. I got the green, and would you describe it as like a hunter green?
Yeah, it's like that like foresty kind of green.
Forest green. Yeah. It's really attractive. It's simple styling. A few other things I really liked about it, the sleeves aren't too long. Mm-hmm. I often get raincoats and the sleeves come over my fingers. The cut of this one was really comfortable, and it was just really about how it functioned and the comfort it gave me on the hikes. I mean, look, I sweat on hikes. I'm going to be honest. This coat kept me warm and dry. And then after the hike was over and I got back in the truck, it just dries very quickly where my other raincoat stays soggy.
You go, oh, I don't feel. And it was so funny because the minute you said that, I was unzipping my raincoat and I had that like, oh, get it off.
Well, it feels like
feeling
a garbage bag. Yeah. And it's not even a bad raincoat.
I mean,
we have decent raincoats, but it just feels like the water is all trapped in there. This coat doesn't feel that way.
I was sweaty in mine. And you're like, I'm not sweaty in my raincoat.
So out of the gear we've been testing so far from Cabela's, I love this rainy day river parka. I totally love it. It also packs back up in a little baggie, so it doesn't take up a lot of room. It's very compact. You can store it away in a small little RV closet.
So am I going to get the Gore-Tex now?
I told you, you have to step up to Gore-Tex. I've had like Gore-Tex sneakers. I never really realized like, oh my God, this material, this fabric, I can't call it fabric.
Yeah.
I mean, it is worth the extra money to step into a Gore-Tex raincoat, particularly if you're hiking a lot on misty or rainy days.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to experiencing the difference.
We're going back to the Cabela's store in Pennsylvania. When we get back from this big road trip, we are going out to the Cabela's in Pennsylvania, and you're getting one of these.
Okay. All right. I get a Gore-Tex jacket. Good. Well, okay. So you had mentioned rain gear to Cabela's as something that you were definitely looking to up your game with. Well, I talked to them, and this is like, we have a lot of like our male listeners right now are going to be like, okay, this is TMI. But I really do want to talk about women's outdoor wear here in this segment, because one of the things that I had talked to Cabela's about is he said, you know, I'm really having trouble shopping for my sort of I would say, activewear, right?
You kind of torture yourself over it, to be honest with you.
I have been very unhappy with my choices. And I'm going to say there is a catalog that comes to our home on a regular basis. And I'm not going to name the catalog. I love the look of so many of these clothes in this catalog, but I don't love the fit. Why? Because I have my mom body now. Okay. I've had 3 kids and my body isn't what it was at one point. And so for me, you know, it can be really tricky finding clothes that both function well and that make me feel comfortable and like I look okay. So the thing about this catalog that I'm talking about that comes is, you know, it has the material that's for active women. What does that mean? That means stretchy, breathable, right? It allows for a lot of movement. Now that kind of material often tends to cling. And that is where I'm saying.
Often. How about always?
It clings. And that's where I'm going to be honest right now and talk to, you know, the women that listen to the show and say, like, we know how it feels to have clothes that are clinging to our bodies in a way that we're not comfortable with. And it can really, you know, just kind of like be a real bummer when you're trying to dress as an active
and
mom.
I'm going to step in for a second and smack me around if you need to. When you're hiking and you're kayaking and you're experiencing the great outdoors, you just don't want body image on your mind, right?
Oh, that's always a struggle for us moms after we have kids. I mean, some moms snap right back. God bless you, those moms. Love you. But it didn't happen for me. So I don't want to sit around and feel sorry for myself and say, oh, I don't look the way I used to look. What I want is to find clothes that really fit me, that make me feel good, and that also enable me to be the active mom that I am. And I'll be honest, that's almost exactly what I said to the good folks at Cabela's. I was like, help me out here. I'm looking for some things in that category. Well, they did, because they sent me, one of the things we talked about was the skort, you know, option that's out there. And, you know, the women know this is like the skirt, but it has shorts underneath it. Okay? And I was interested in this because when you're hiking, especially with a baby on your back, you really need something that moves very freely and that also feels like it's fitting you well. So they sent me the Cabela's Women's Triune Skort. All right, it retails for $49.99, but guess what? Right now, I'm going to put the link in the show notes because it's on sale for $29.99 right now on the website.
You need to buy another one.
So
does it come in what colors?
So it comes in khaki or black, which, you know, good.
Would you wear
standard.
Black? I mean, you tested khaki and it looked really good.
Yeah,
would you wear black?
I would like a black pair too. So these skorts, I'm telling you, they're now my favorite clothing
Stephanie
item.
Has not loved a piece of gear/equipment/clothing for the outdoor lifestyle this much ever.
Yeah.
She has been, I have to like say, like, honey, be quiet. You've been talking about this thing too much.
Stop it. I have not been. But the way that it sits on my body, right? So it helps with the mom body, the tummy that we're all worried about. So it actually like just fits really nicely over that and doesn't make me feel self-conscious. I'm being like super vulnerable and open with our listeners right now. But I think it's important because I know that there's a lot of moms out there that struggle with the same thing. So it fit perfectly around my stomach, which I was really happy
with. Can I make a statement now too? We often hike in the morning and then we'll go out to lunch and we don't go back and shower and change. You know, like if we're out and about in a national park, we'll just go from one to the other. And sometimes like I'll change my shirt or something if I bring a spare change.
We hope, yeah.
But like you, it looked nice on you going from a hike to saying like a casual lunch at Jordan Pond House.
And
I really like that aspect of it because it didn't look like you were showing up for lunch in your hiking gear.
I don't know.
Unquote.
I'm not going to lie. I like the way it looked. I was really happy with the way
really,
this
to
fit.
Me, it looks more like a skirt than it does a piece of hiking gear.
Yeah. And yet it moved so well when we were hiking, when we were doing anything. I wore this a million times in our trip so far. And I just cannot tell you how comfortable these are. this is my go-to whenever we were doing anything active.
So let's get you one in black. So okay. You need a Gore-Tex coat, and you need one of these for $29.99. Are you kidding me? I'm going to order it tonight.
See how this works, folks, if you give a mouse a cookie. Okay. So, yeah.
This is why Cabela's wanted to team up with us, by the way, because they realized, you know.
They know we appreciate good stuff.
We'll go shopping.
Yeah. Right.
For everything we try, we'll buy two things.
Yeah. So that is my pick. I love it. Ladies, if you try it and you like it, let me know. I really want to hear some feedback because I know that we're not all the same, but I felt like some of this was a little bit of a universal issue for women's clothing that others of our listeners might be able to relate to.
So you need to try and find some other pieces of clothing in this vein, I think, to test out for another episode.
I have a couple already.
Okay. Yeah,
but
we're going to be...
this was my top... But I think we started out with our top pick, like clothing picks.
This was... I had been using this. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look, literally, we spent 5 rainy days on the Scudic Peninsula. I put on that Gore-Tex raincoat every day, and it was just like, I love this, I love this, I love this.
Next week, we're going to have our top camping.
Yeah, and I want our listeners to know as we review gear from Cabela's, if we don't like it, we're not going to review it. And I would make a stronger statement. If we don't love it, we're not going to review it. We're going to be reviewing the stuff that we get that we really believe in and we want you to try as well.
All right. So those were our his and her picks for hiking. It was the men's Rainy Day River Parka with Gore-Tex and the women's Cabela's Triune Skort. We'll put the links in the show notes to both of those articles if you're interested in checking them out further.
And I love how I'm like the prima donna and my item was like 3 times the cost of yours.
Your item is always 3 times the cost as mine.
Well, wait till we get to the
doing.
Ice machine on a future episode.
Don't give it
that's,
away.
Oh my God, this ice machine has changed my life.
All right. We'll be right back to wrap up the show.
Thank you so much for listening to episode number 97 of RV Family Travel Atlas. Find your park, hashtag NPS100. And thank you so much to our sponsors that make this possible. Thank you to Good Sam, to Campers Inn, and to Cabela's.
And thank you also to Progressive. If you are looking for a fun road trip this summer and love country music, point your RV towards Wisconsin and head on over to the Country Thunder Music Festival in the Twin Lakes, July 21st through July 24th. The Progressive RV will be on site with fun activities and opportunities to win some great prizes. For more information, visit wisconsin.countrythunder.com.
The older I get, the more I like country music.
I know you do, honey. The older you get, the more we listen to country music.
Hunting, fishing.
He's got some Luke Bryan hits coming.
On the weekend.
Just because you like to say, yeah, I'm pro staff like Luke Bryan.
Hunting and fishing. I want to go hunting and fishing
this
with Luke
is
Bryan.
The second
I like that song.
Time
I bought that song on iTunes.
You're singing on this show.
So
okay.
We just lost about 200 subscribers.
It's been nice knowing you, folks.
Please don't unsubscribe. Actually, I think when I sang last time, like, people really responded like really positively to it.
Oh, do you have any evidence of that? I think there was like a hashtag on Instagram that was like, please, Jeremy, never sing on the podcast.
Our subscription numbers keep going up, dear.
All right, folks, we will talk to you next week. And until then, we will see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.